I was woken up this morning at 3 a.m. by a cry from my three-year-old. Ever been there before? Well, that was last night. We have a monitor in our room that is in my three-year-old son's room as well, because you will not believe the antics he gets up to at 3 a.m. in the morning. And so instead of waiting for the house to actually burn down, we put a monitor in there. That way we can prevent as much of the trouble as possible. Now he pretty much sleeps well through the night, but you just never know, right? So last night, 3 a.m., boom, I wake up, he's crying, which is fairly standard procedure. Usually it means he needs to go potty. So I go into the room, and he's sitting on the edge of his bed, and he's holding up a pair of undies, and he's going, "I can't put them on! I can't put them on!" Because it's pitch black, and he can't see anything, and he's trying to get his feet in a pair of undies, and he can't get them on. So I go, "It's okay, buddy, I'll get them on for you." And as I'm grabbing the undies, I'm thinking to myself, wait a second. Why am I putting undies on him? Because they were on him prior to him going to bed, and when he went to bed, now it's 3 a.m. and they're not on him anymore, so something's going on here. It's an amazing thing how smart you are at 3 in the morning. And so I said to Cole, "Buddy, do you need to go potty?" And he goes, "Yeah!" And I'm like, "Okay, well, let's go potty." So I'm walking out with a pair of undies in one hand and a three-year-old in the other hand, and I get to about halfway to the bathroom, and I suddenly think to myself, wait a second, where are his PJ pants? Because he had those on too. And then I'm thinking, as I walk into the dim light of the bathroom, I look at the undies and I'm like, wait a second, these aren't the undies he was wearing when he went to bed. Something's going on here. You just know it. So he goes potty and I go back and I'm like, oh. So I walk over and I put my hand on the bed. And as I put my hand on the bed, I'm like, oh, I guess I'm washing my hand tonight. Because you know, you put your hand right there in the old pee. And so now, here's the thing about Cole, right? Just so when he listens to this when he's 16, he's not totally embarrassed. Cole's totally potty trained now. He does the undie thing in the morning, during the day, even at night when he sleeps. I mean, that's how good he is. So he is fantastic at this. This would be a totally out-of-the-box, unusual situation for him. So I'm like, huh, that's that, oh, well, you know, no big deal. It happens once in a while. So as I'm stripping the sheets off and he's laying with mom for a minute, I start thinking to myself, wait a second. Where are those pants and those other undies? So I already know, man. I already know. I put him down to bed. I reach down into the hamper, and oh, yeah, there they are in the laundry hamper, wet as can be. And I'm going, yep, here's the pee-filled pants. So what happened? What happened at 3 in the morning? My child woke up at 3 years old. He had wet his bed either pre-waking up or post-waking up. We'll never know that story. And decided that since he would probably get in trouble for wetting his bed, which in this case was not going to happen, but you know how kids think, he goes, if I can just take my pants off, my undies off, throw them in the hamper, get a new pair of undies, put them on and go right back to sleep in that pee-pee bed, by the time I wake up in the morning, it'll be dry, no one will know the difference, and I'll be good. So now, in the middle of a 3 a.m. morning, I am totally discouraged because I'm like, my children are lying to me again. They're deceiving me. And they do it at 3 in the morning when their brains are supposed to be slow. Can you even imagine what they're doing at noon? And then I started realizing, oh my gosh, this is it, right? I mean, my three-year-old is figuring this out. By the time he gets to be a teenager, he's going to have schemes that are unbelievable. And the problem is, as a teenager, the consequences of lying to your parents because of the things you get yourself into are significantly greater than sleeping in a bed full of pee. And I went, wow, this is not good. So I went and laid in my bed, right? And I was laying in my bed, and I was just overwhelmed. I got to tell you, I was overwhelmed by the responsibility of being a father. I was overwhelmed by the call in my life to take care of my children's hearts at this age, because if I don't, the consequences are death and destruction for them. I was overwhelmed by what God had called me to. Because you see, that morning in our devotional time as a family on our Sabbath, we have Sabbath on Sunday on Saturdays, because Sundays I'm kind of here, and so we were doing our Sabbath, and I was talking with my other three children about a very important verse. It's out of the book of Proverbs, and it says this: guard your heart above all else, because it determines the direction of your life. Isn't that incredible? Guard your heart above all else, because what's in your heart will determine the direction of your life. And I'm laying in my bed at 3 in the morning going, God, I want the direction of my child's life to be life and freedom, not to be death and destruction. I need to guard his heart. I told my other three children, Mom and Dad work hard every day to guard your hearts until you're old enough to guard your own hearts. Because if you don't, horrible things will come into them and horrible things will come out of them. And you won't even know it because you'll be lying about it. And as I'm laying in my bed, it suddenly dawned on me. I'm not alone. That responsibility, I'm not alone in it. You know why? Because I belong to a place like this. I belong to a family called Mosaic. Every Sunday, I bring my four children into here, and they get plugged into people who love them and who care for them and who guard their hearts on my behalf, alongside me and my wife, so that they can grow up in a world where they will be the kinds of children whose life direction is determined by what their hearts are doing. I was overwhelmed by the fact that I get to be part of a story like this. I was overwhelmed by the fact that my son, 3 years old, every Sunday, every Wednesday, every single time we bring him in here, is surrounded by people, you that volunteer in the children's ministry or any other ministry for that matter, and you guys pour yourselves into him so that someday he will be a man that will live a life that's extraordinary. And it's not only up to me because you guys are in the battle with me. And I was overwhelmed with gratitude for this place and for the fact that I get to be part of a family like this. This place is far bigger than me now. It is something that I need as badly as the rest of us. And then I was thinking to myself how tragic it is that there are millions of people in our country that have not got a place like this, that are on their own, trying their best to guard their children's hearts when they don't even know what guarding a child's heart means because they've never been taught as an adult what it means to guard their own hearts. And they're floundering through life hoping that their teenagers turn out okay and their young adults turn out okay and everything turns out okay. And that's the life that they live. And as I'm laying in my bed, I'm thinking, God, that's what I want to be part of. I want to continue to be part of that. And God goes, now do you get what I've been telling you all week long? What I want you to tell everybody? And I lay there and I thought, I get it now. I get it. It came to life for me at 3 a.m. in the morning. I don't know what would have happened if that hadn't happened because I would have probably preached a really boring message. But at 3 in the morning, everything I'd studied that week came to life for me. And I want to journey you now through my studies for the week so that you can see how they came to life as everything began to affect what happens here. Turn with me in your Bibles first to the book of Matthew, because this is the journey God took me on this week as I traveled in preparation for today. Matthew chapter 6 is where we're going to start. If you don't have a Bible under our chairs, there's a bunch of them. Grab one of those. If you don't have a good Bible at home, take one of ours home and write your name in it. Matthew chapter 6, page 673. We're going to verse 19. Matthew chapter 6, verse 19, page 673. It says this, Jesus is teaching. This is his big sermon, the Sermon on the Mount. This is him teaching us what the kingdom of God looks like and how it functions. And this is what he says. Do not store up for yourself treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy, and where thieves break in and steal. But store up for yourself treasures in heaven, where moth and rust do not destroy, and where thieves do not break in and steal. Now, let's stop there for a second. You understand what Jesus is saying here? He's saying we all have stuff, resources, and we give our resources to things. We invest in things. And he says, don't invest the majority of your resources in things that will come and rob and steal. Some of you may have experienced an actual robber coming in your house taking your stuff, and that's a pretty tragic situation. But most of us, I can say this, that have never maybe experienced this, have experienced this. Have you had money in the stock market lately? Wow, they sure took your money, didn't they? Well, they took it all. There's hardly nothing left. What about a house? You bought a house 3 years ago? Fantastic. Your house came to you and then sucked everything else you had out of you. So now you got a house and no money. And your house actually owes more money than you ever had in the first place. Isn't that fun? So you live in a world where you have watched things steal away what you have. And God says, not surprised, when we invest ourselves on this planet, sometimes it comes, sometimes it goes, but moths and people and thieves and stuff will steal it away. And here's the good news. If you happen to be one of the lucky ones and make it through your whole life without someone stealing it away, then you die and someone will come and take it then. Don't worry, because it won't be yours anymore. Isn't that fun? So Jesus says, look, I'm telling you, don't waste your time on that, because it's not going to get you anywhere. In fact, he says this. This is where verse 21 ends. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. That's how he ends it. He ends that little passage by saying, guys, here's why this is so important. Because wherever you place your treasure, that will be a direct link to your heart. And your heart will be where your treasure is, trust me. So if your treasure is here, your heart will be here. If your treasure is in something much bigger, your heart will be in something much bigger. Why does it matter so much where our hearts are at on this planet? I'll tell you. Turn with me back to the book of 2 Chronicles. It's back a little way, 2 Chronicles chapter 16, page 312 of our Bibles, Old Testament, 2 Chronicles 16. So in 2 Chronicles 16, we catch a story here that shows us why the condition of our heart and where our hearts are committed is so critical to the everyday story we live. Here in verse 7, chapter 16, 2 Chronicles, page 312, it says this. At that time, Hanani, the seer, came to Asa, king of Judah, and said to him, because you relied on the king of Aram and not on the Lord your God, the army of the king of Aram has escaped from your hand. Interesting, isn't it? Then he says this, were not the Cushites and the Libanites a mighty army with great numbers of chariots and horsemen? Question. Yet, when you relied on the Lord, he delivered them into your hand. Do you see that? He's saying that huge army that was going to wipe you out, that obstacle you couldn't overcome, did you not rely on God then? And did he not deliver you from that? And now, after that whole event, you're now suddenly in a place where things are easy enough where you can rely on yourself. So you did, and because you did, you lost this battle. In fact, he goes on to say more. He says this. Here's where he explains it. Verse 9. For you understand, for the eyes of the Lord range throughout the earth to strengthen those whose what? Hearts are fully committed to him. And then he says to him, you have done a foolish thing, my friend, and from now on you will be at war. Isn't that cool? So he says to us here in this passage, understand how this system works. You rely on God, and God delivers you. And then you don't rely on God, and now you're stuck in this world. God's way, your way. And he says, let me tell you what God is doing, okay? God finds the people on this planet whose hearts are fully committed to him, and then he strengthens those people and does extraordinary things through them. There it is. Now we can go around all the theological stuff all day long, but the bottom line is that if your heart is committed to God, he's going to find you and strengthen you. And if your heart is committed to other things, then you are going to miss out on the story of God strengthening that heart of yours because you're busy with all sorts of other things. How much does it matter that our hearts are bent on things to come and not things that are here? It matters a great deal, not just to the church, but to you each individually. Turn with me real quick, if you will, to 1 Timothy chapter 6. It's a little in the New Testament now. We're jumping forward. 1 Timothy chapter 6, page 824 and 25. 824. Here, Paul is writing to Timothy, and he kind of nails this down in an extraordinary way. He gives us a clue here into what we might miss if our hearts are not tied to God in this way as it relates to our treasures, okay? This is Timothy now. He's going to give us an incredible clue. Watch this. Paul's writing to Timothy and he's saying, Timothy, listen up. Verse 17 of chapter 6, 1 Timothy. Command those who are rich in this present world not to be arrogant, nor to put their hope in wealth, which is so uncertain, but to put their hope in God, who richly provides us with everything for our enjoyment. Let's just stop there for a second. Let's just get something straight real quick in this room. Just get the elephant out of the room, okay? You guys are probably sitting there like I would and going, well, it's about time somebody tells those rich people not to be arrogant. It's about time someone tells them how to spend their money. It's about time someone talks to them. Well, let me just share a little secret with you. Just a little secret. I've traveled a lot of the world at this point, had the privilege of going into some of the most unbelievable places on the missions work that we've done for years and years now. I have seen things that make Haiti look like normal. That was Haiti after a massive earthquake. There are places in the world where that is almost normal. Most of the world exists in a way that if they were to try and imagine, try and wrap their minds around what you and I experience at our worst, when we're in debt, losing our house, and everything else is falling apart, they couldn't even experience that in their minds, because there's no way they would be able to think about what we see every day. No way. We are the rich. We are the wealthy. We are the ones. So Paul is speaking to us here in America, saying, your worst in America is incredible in the rest of the world. And I'm not minimizing the difficulty of poverty. I'm just telling you, we have a skewed view of what rich means. And here Paul says to Timothy, let's talk about those of us that have more than we can ever imagine. Look what he says, though. This is where it gets incredibly cool. He says, command them, verse 18, to do good, to be rich in good deeds, and to be generous and willing to share. In this way, they will lay up treasure for themselves as a firm foundation for the coming age. Now, don't miss this, because this is incredible, okay? Here it is. So that they may take hold of the life that is what? Truly life. Isn't that incredible? Don't you love that word? What Paul is saying here to Timothy is, when those who have spend themselves for the sake of what cannot be seen, for the sake of the kingdom, what they find is not death, is not even struggle, is not even, I wish I had my stuff. It is life, but more than life. He's saying, if you do this, if you're generous in sharing and you're rich in good deeds, you will find the life that is truly life. That's what God wants for us. Let's take that a step further and turn back. This is the last passage we'll read today. We're going to go to the book of 2 Corinthians chapter 4. Here Paul, also writing now to the church in Corinth, lays this out for us in such a way that it begins to explain what he's talking about. This culminates in everything that we have been talking about here. Watch what it says. Verse 7, page 802 of our Bibles, chapter 4 of 2 Corinthians. It says this. But we have this treasure in jars of clay to show that this all-surpassing power is from God and not from us. We are hard-pressed on every side, but not crushed. Perplexed, but not in despair. Persecuted, but not abandoned. Struck down, but not destroyed. We always carry around in our body the death of Jesus, so that the life of Jesus may also be revealed in our body. What is that? I mean, just let's be honest for a second. Sometimes we read the Bible and we're like, we all pretend we understand. Sounds great. Yeah, the death of Jesus is in the life of Jesus and the revealed Jesus of the death. It's really good. But what does that mean? We carry the death of Jesus around so that the life of Jesus may also be revealed? Well, here's how he explains it. Watch. He says this. For we who are alive, verse 11, are always being given over to death for Jesus' sake, so that his life may be revealed in our mortal bodies. So then, here it is, death is at work in us, but life is at work in you. He's writing to the church in Corinth that it was a church he established, a church that he is discipling, and he did it at great cost. So what is he saying to them? Every single day, every day I face persecution, I face perplexity, being pressed hard, I face being struck down. All for what? On your behalf. I will go through whatever I have to on your behalf. I will sacrifice whatever. Death is constantly at my doorstep. I am constantly at the point of dying for Jesus for your sake. Why? Why? So that the life of Jesus would be revealed to you. I sacrifice so that you will have life. That's what Paul is saying here. I carry death so that you will find life. And so he writes that. So then death is at work in us. That's Paul and his little band of apostles. But life is at work in you because the death is at work in us. Look what he says. Verse 13. It is written, I believe, therefore I have spoken. With the same spirit of faith, we also believe and therefore speak. because we know that the one who raised the Lord Jesus from the dead will also raise us with Jesus and present us with you in his presence. So Paul now says, we have nothing to worry about despite our sacrifice because we know that our sacrifice will lead to life in all of us. Look at this. All this is for your benefit so that the grace that is reaching more and more people may cause thanksgiving to overflow to the glory of God. So he says, the more we sacrifice, the more and more people experience the grace of God and find life in Jesus and find what it means to guard their hearts and what it means to live in community and what it means to follow Jesus. The more we give, the more they find. And the more that find, the more that end up giving, the more that find. You see that incredible circle? And here he puts it into perfect words, verse 16. Therefore, we do not lose heart. No, we don't. Though outwardly we are wasting away, yet inwardly we are being renewed day by day. For our light and momentary troubles are achieving for us an eternal glory that far outweighs them all. You see what he says? The little troubles we face now, don't look at them. They're so light and momentary. They do nothing. In fact, the only thing they do is that the more trouble and momentary struggle you have, the greater the glory is that you're going to walk into on the other side because it is revealing a greater story. So don't look at what your troubles are now. Make your decisions on a much bigger story. Look, he says it right here. He says, so then we fix our eyes on what is, or not, our eyes not on what is seen, but on what is unseen. For what is seen is what? Temporary. But what is unseen is eternal. Wow. Over my journey following Jesus, he has called Brooke and I out on numerous occasions into things we still look back and go, wow, that was crazy. Not among the least of those who's calling us to a place called Claremont, Florida, to an incredible church called Mosaic. The only problem with the call was that the church wasn't here yet. So when we showed up, he said, here it is. It's a great church. And we went, where? And he went, it's going to come. Don't worry. So we started with a little band of blood brothers and sisters that bled with us the first 3 years, and we were certain without a doubt that we would be one of the four churches that fail out of five because we were constantly on the verge of failing. And I was like, God, I told them all the time, you can ask them, they're all still here. I kept saying to them, understand, you're on a journey with us, we're probably going to die. But if we make it, it's going to be quite a story. In fact, Sean, who leads our worship, I flew out to California at one point, didn't have any money, but I took a chance and bought a plane ticket and went out there and I talked to Sean and I said, look, you can be part of one of those really great big churches that's asking you to be part of them right now, or you can come to our church. We have nothing, we can't pay you, and there's very few people and we probably won't make it. But if we do, you'll be the worship leader of a great story. And he came anyways. Sorry, bro. And so we have been called out, no doubt about it, no doubt. But every time we get called out, every time we go beyond ourselves and step into a world we can't believe we're stepping into because it's so scary and so crazy, we are reminded again that there is a world out there that we are spending ourselves for so that they will find life. You see, because while we sit here in this neat little community and we experience all the love of God through this community and all the staff and volunteers and people that pour into us and our children, 93% of America do not go to church. They do not even know about this incredible world in which we function on a weekly basis. They have no idea that their children could live in a world like our children's ministry. They have no idea. And the other 7% that happen to go to church, fantastic for them. But remember, that includes all the churches we don't like. So you start going, wow, that's crazy. Unhealthy churches and healthy churches, and they're all there. And of course, I say that tongue in cheek. We like lots of churches, but there's some unhealthy ones out there, and that includes the 7%. So there's an incredible amount of people, that are not experiencing what we are. And it's easy for us to sit back and say, well, we've got it. We have it. That's good enough. So we experience the life that comes from it. But God says to us, no, you missed the whole point. You want to find the life that is truly life? Then you give yourself away so that others might also find it. See, it's not just my son whose heart needs to be guarded. It's not just my three kids that sit here in this room and my little fourth one. It's not just the two girls Brooke and I are adopting that need this. It is an entire world of children and adults that need it. And here's the cool part. What God says is, spend yourself on what is unseen, because here's what happens. Watch this. Because you guys spend yourselves for the sake of my three-year-old and his heart, he will grow up to be a young man that loves Jesus and that lives his life out in a direction that is dictated by his heart because it was guarded well, a direction that will lead to life and freedom. And you know what will happen? At some point when he's a young adult, he'll be part of something just like this, probably starting it or growing with it or being on a team to be part of it, because he will have grown up here and go, why wouldn't you? That's insane. And then he'll do that. And when he does that, there'll be hundreds of three-year-olds in his story that will find that same wonder of their hearts being guarded. And they'll grow up and they'll be teenagers whose life direction is life and freedom, because they've learned in their church that doing it God's way is life and freedom. And they'll grow up to be that, and they'll start hundreds of little churches all across the country and the world who other hundreds of three-year-olds would come to, and their hearts will be guarded. Do you get the picture? You and I will be dead and gone, and the story will still be going. And that's why we get to be part of something like this. We're starting something here which ripples out across the globe and will never stop, because we're part of it. So every time God calls me to step out and calls Brooke to step out, and he does often, right before we do, I remember a scene in a movie that I love. At least I love this scene. I like the movie too. It's the story of Bruce Lee, and it's kind of told, you know, it's his story told. And there's a scene in this story where he walks into this warehouse with his wife, and he has a little speech with her about what is seen and what is unseen. And it is a speech that still rings in my head every time I'm about to step off a cliff for the sake of Christ and go, here we go. As I step off, I remember, wait, what is unseen is always far greater than what is seen. So take a look at this scene, and I'll tell you what's going on afterwards.
What is this place? What are we doing here?
Come on, be a little adventurous.
Where are you taking me?
Well, what do you think?
I don't know what to think.
What do you mean you don't know what to think? This is your idea?
My idea. To move into an industrial slum.
This is no slum. This is the first Bruce Lee Kung Fu Institute. You talked me into it. You make me feel like I can do anything. When I came over on the boat, I knew this was an idea place. Ideas make this country great. Here, a good idea makes a man anything he wants to be. You drop a pebble in a pond, you get ripples. Soon, the ripples cross the whole pond.
About 10 years ago, a ripple began for Brooke and I. We were at a church in the West Coast. The church is called Shoreline Community Church. It was about 700 or 800 people at the time. There was a piece of property they found. It was $2 million for the property, give or take. And they came to the church and they said, hey, we want you guys to pray and pledge together so we can get this property. Don't know when we're going to be able to build on it. Don't know what the story looks like, but at least gets our foot in the door on some property. We were meeting in the high school at the time. Brooke and I were the student ministries pastors there. I was doing things for student ministries there, and Brooke and I got together, and we were making a whopping $31,000-$32,000 a month combined between the two of us. A year, my bad. Brooke was like, what? What? So, sorry, a year. It's a little different, a year. 10 years ago, we were living in Monterey, California, and the cost of living in Monterey, California 10 years ago was double the cost of living in Orlando at its height. I mean, that place is the most expensive place on the planet, bar none. It's not that there are expensive houses and cheap houses there, or expensive, beautiful houses and cheap dumps. It's that there are expensive, beautiful houses and very expensive dumps. And that's how that place functions. So whatever you're into there, it's going to cost an arm and a leg. And Brooke and I lived in a world where every month we scraped to try to make it through. We lived as carefully and simply as we could. We didn't go out. We didn't do any of that stuff, man. We had our first child, Hadley, and the future was uncertain. And there was a lot going on in our lives. And we're like, whoa. And so we started talking about what God would call us out to give to this campaign, 2-year pledge, right? So we came up with some numbers we thought were pretty good, but apparently God had a different plan. And so as we talked through it and as we prayed through it, it kept creeping its way into a place where we started getting more and more afraid. And at a certain point, it landed. And we got to a place where, as Brooke looked at the finances, we landed on $7,000 for those 2 years. A little couple with our new little baby, and we were like, here we go, $7,000. Now, we were already tithing to the church, and this was over and above tithing, and tithing was hard! So we were like, God, what are you doing? And we had this plan. It kind of boiled down to, if we take all our birthday money and all our stuff, and we sell a few things if necessary, if God doesn't provide any other way, I think we could probably make it. Most of our stuff was Salvation Army at that point, so it wasn't worth that much. But we were kind of like in that place where you're like, here we go, God. And I remember when I walked up to drop that in, and I remember thinking to myself, okay, God, I don't think this is impossible, but it feels impossible. That's how it felt. You're like, here we go. And we dropped that in. And over the next 2 years, God was incredibly faithful. And we got that taken care of in some extraordinary ways. But here's the cool part. I had no idea the ripple that God was already starting there. Because you see, at that moment in time, God began a work in my life and my wife's life to get us ready for a call like this. Renaud, here's what I want you to do. I want you to sell everything you have and move to Claremont, Florida to start a church. No. Remember, 2 years ago, you gave $7,000. You're good. That's where it started, guys. You want to know where it started? It started back at calls like that where God said, step out now because you may as well get used to it because I'm going to call you out in some bigger things. And here's what gets to happen, you see? Yeah, during those times, it's always hard because if you look at what is immediate, what is temporal, you look at your stuff and you go, no way. But we had to look past that into what was unseen. And as we did, and we took a step of faith and we jumped, God not only provided for us to do what we needed to do, but he called us here. And then we went through another crazy ride here of felt like death and destruction. And then guess what happened one day? One day I woke up in the morning. I woke up in the morning after a 3 a.m. wake-up call with my son, with a God showing me what a church was doing in my own children's lives, let alone the lives of hundreds of other children. I woke up here this morning with this church doing what this church is doing around the world, and I realized this is a ripple worth sacrificing for. It's been worth every step of the way. It was worth coming here, and it's still worth being here. And even if none of this had happened, it was still worth it because God said to me, here's the deal, Renaud. You drop one rock in this pond, and I will ripple things out so far you won't know what to do with yourself. And I'm watching it happen. You know what's really cool? This church is a ripple of that decision 10 years ago for Brooke and I to take a big step of faith despite what we thought was impossible. And here we stand today in the same place again. And what's incredible for me is that that isn't the only ripple. Shoreline Community Church, over the last 10 years, they've built that building now. We never saw it because we weren't there when they built it. But people are now worshiping in that building. And hundreds of lives every Sunday and every week are being changed in that building. And you know who's sharing in that? Me and Brooke. We're taking credit for some of that. Because we spent ourselves to put that building up so those people could show up so that they could have their lives changed. So I'm part of a story while I sleep at night, because the time difference, it's really cool. And while I'm sleeping, things are happening in Monterey, California, and I'm sharing in life change. I'm not even doing anything anymore. You talk about investment, that's investment. So here Brooke and I stand again on the same stage after another wild ride, and we started praying this week and thinking this week about what we're going to pledge to this crazy building ride we're about to get onto. And we started coming up with the number, and then last night we talked again, and then this morning I looked at Brooke and I said, are you sure? And she said, no, but let's jump because it's not 7,000 anymore, and we're scared. But we looked at it and we said, you know, this number right here represents the almost impossible. That's what it represents. Didn't pledge $1 million and saying to God, you better make me win the lottery, because that would be pointless to all of us. But we pledged that amount that goes, and just makes you take a deep breath and go, God, hope you're in this story. No, you are. So today, as we stand here, I'm calling you into this story. This is your church. You see that wall back there? That wall is restricting the amount of people that can enjoy the grace and love and freedom that you guys enjoy on a weekly basis. You know what your children are getting right now? Well, as soon as we move that wall back, we're going to take out 4 of our children's classrooms. Isn't that fun? Since we don't have a lot of kids, though, it's okay. We'll just have a bigger sanctuary. Oh, wait, we're in the wrong church. We have more kids than adults, so we got a problem. So we have to build a building outside of this, a smaller version of this building, so that it can just be kids' rooms, lots of them. So when you drop your kids off and your friends drop their kids off for the first time, they don't feel like, wow, 90 kids in one room. I don't think that's safe. But they go, this is good. And as we do that, more and more lives will walk into this place and experience what you and I are already experiencing. And yes, is it inconvenient for us? Of course it is. Who wants a bigger church? I don't. I mean that sincerely. It bugs me to death that I don't know every one of you. Who wants more people around you? No, we don't. We're happy right now. And we don't need a bigger building because our kids are already having their hearts guarded. And we're already growing. But then God says, I know. But that's not the point. If you want to find life that is truly life, you spend yourself for those who do not yet know the grace that is yours already. And so we say, yes, we'll do that. So we're going to push that back. We're going to build that building. And we've gotten lots of people together thinking about 20 different ways to do this. And we came up with the most inexpensive way to do it. It's going to cost us $1.2 million to finish the entire thing. Expanding all of this. We could have built a brand new sanctuary out there for $2 million or bought land for $2 million, but for now we're just saying, hey, let's just get this done. $1.2 million. Our church is bigger than the church at Shoreline was when they did the $2 million project 10 years ago. So for us to stand together and say, this is a no-brainer, we got this, should be a no-brainer. But it is going to require us all to say, God, here I go. I'm in this story. And Brooke and I, it requires that of us again, and it will again and again. So let me just warn you, if you get into this story, it won't be the first and it won't be the last. But every time you step off this cliff and trust God, every time, your ripple will ring across the planet.